Sunday Surefire Podcast. I'm your host, the Commish. Joining me today is the co-host, Ethan Weaver.
Commish, how we doing?
How am I doing? I am doing awesome, my man. It is a legal tampering period going on right now. By the time you folks are listening to this up there, the free agency will officially be underway in all likelihood. I'm like a little kid here on Christmas morning with all this NFL news, all these players changing teams from going from one place to another and just constantly moving around here, the landscapes of the fantasy football and definitely of Dynasty as well. So I'm doing great. I can't wait to get the show going. As you could probably imagine, we're going to be talking a lot of free agency here, or legal tampering, I should say. Contracts cannot be made official until Wednesday, but we're going to talk about all the moves that have been going on here, specifically at the quarterback and the running back positions. We'll cover the wide receiver moves, some tight end moves, and any other notable quarterback or running back moves that take place between now and next week. We'll touch on that a week from now, but we have a ton of guys to get to here. So we're going to skip all the pleasantries and we're going to jump right into the quarterbacks that have moved teams here. We're going to talk about the contracts they got and then sort of what it means for their outlook for them this season, and also for what it looks like for these players on the dynasty front and maybe any residual players that are affected by this player changing teams. So a lot to get to. We're going to get it rolling with the $180 million man here. And it finally happened. We had Kirk Cousins jumping ship from the Vikings. He ends up with the Atlanta Falcons on a 4-year, $180 million contract, $100 million of which was fully guaranteed. So Ethan, what do you think about Kirk Cousins landing in hot Atlanta?
I mean, it's great news for Kirk Cousins getting another bag. So great for him, but no, I love the landing spot for Kirk. He's going into a situation where there's a bunch of pieces around him. It's going to be great to see Drake London paired with a competent quarterback like Kirk Cousins. I think Drake London's stock is going to go through the roof. He's probably a guy, if you saw the Kirk Cousins signing coming down the pike, he's probably a guy you should have probably sought out in trades. Obviously, Kyle Pitts, Bijan Robinson. They just gave Darnell Mooney a decent chunk of change as well. He's a speedster, so he's probably going to be the field stretcher for them. But I just think it's a very good situation for Kirk Cousins. They have a pretty good defense down there, very good against the run in Atlanta. And I think Cousins can make the Atlanta offense very productive. And they probably should be the favorites to win the NFC South next year with Kirk Cousins at the helm. So definitely a great landing spot for Captain Kirk.
I agree on the division. I think they would definitely be the favorites. I mean, no one in that division has won more than 9 games in the last 2 years. So the Falcons finished 7-10 on their own right last season. And Kirk is obviously a big upgrade to what they've had there over guys like Marcus Mariota or Desmond Ridder or Taylor Heineke, et cetera. And like you said, great for the skill players. I mean, we've been kind of ragging on Arthur Smith here for a couple of years for holding back the likes of Drake London and Kyle Pitts, but he's out of town now as well, which is a good thing. So no more excuses for those two guys. It's time for them to step up and produce. And as far as Cousins here, I don't see this really shifting his dynasty stock at all. You know, he was in a really good spot in Minnesota where he was producing. You know, he was between 2020 and 2022. He was QB7 in points per game. He finished as a QB1 every year between 2020 and 2022. And in 2023, before going down with an injury, you know, he was QB7 on the year in points per game. So he really just needs to maintain the level of play that he gave us in Minnesota over the last couple of seasons for him to be really kind of the same guy he was on the was from a dynasty standpoint. You know, he is 36 years old, so he's not getting any younger. And those guys typically don't go up in value at this stage of their careers. So if he can just kind of stay relatively in the same neighborhood as what he was in Minnesota down in Atlanta, I think it's going to be a big win for him, and definitely a win for those skill players as well. Sort of just that that rising tide that lifts all the boats down there, if you will. But let's keep the train moving. We're going to go to Baker Mayfield getting a big extension in his own right with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It's 3 years, $100 million. Gets to stick around in Tampa after playing for 3 different teams between 2021 and 2022. Sort of a feel-good story here for the former number one overall pick, who kind of struggled, went through some things in Cleveland, obviously Carolina, and you know that brief stint with the Rams were kind of tough to see for Baker, but he's really come out on the other side of it in just a year's time and finished QB10 overall a season ago. the team brings back essentially all their skill players. Mike Evans back in town, along with Chris Godwin, K. Dotton, Rashad White, maybe even some additional help coming in the backfield as well. But, I think looking at Baker here, Evans a high-end QB2, a player that you can start with confidence in your super flex leagues. Just that contract is big for him, just getting a little bit of certainty. We'll see how it's structured exactly, if it's a really structured as a 2-year deal or as more of a 3-year deal. Either way, I think it's bottom is a couple years as a starter, whether it's in Tampa or elsewhere, if they do decide to move on from him eventually. But overall, I don't think any player has rebounded in a bigger way than in 1 year's time than Baker Mayfield. What are your thoughts on him?
I agree completely. Baker Mayfield was kind of left for dead once he went from Cleveland to Carolina, especially when he's kind of fizzled out in Carolina. And just for him to kind of rebound the way he did, as you said, it's just great for him. And it's great for his dynasty stock. I mean, you're probably guaranteed, as you said, probably 2 years of Baker Mayfield starting, and maybe three, depending how the contract is structured, as you alluded to. But I mean, you're getting a guy that's gonna throw the hell out of the football. He was number one in deep ball attempts last year. He was number seven in pass attempts. He was number seven in passing touchdowns with 28, and number nine in passing yards, number three in air yards. So the Tampa Bay Buccaneers throw the ball. He's in a perfect fantasy situation, I would say, for quarterback production. And as you said, I don't see him being anything less than a high-end quarterback too. So Baker, I think, is in a perfect spot for him, perfect spot for fantasy, and just a great just a great story for, as you said, the former number one overall pick.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And let's keep going here. Let's go to Russell Wilson here, signing with the Steelers. 1 year, $1.2 million contract. Obviously, Denver is going to be paying the majority of his salary for this season. Oddly enough, they're paying him $38 million a year to actually play against them when Pittsburgh travels out to Mile High this at some point during the 2024 season. So, we talk about Baker as being kind of a feel-good story. This is kind of more of a nightmare type of experience, a horror, more of a horror movie for Broncos fans and fans of Russell Wilson in general. But yeah, a disastrous couple seasons in Denver, and now finds himself in Pittsburgh. Ethan, where are you at on Wilson heading into 2024?
I haven't seen like a fall from grace by a quote unquote potential Hall of Fame quarterback, top five quarterback in the league, and then Russell Wilson. Ever since he's left Seattle, it's just been a constant nosedive, and he's been kind of a laughing stock. He's kind of been the butt end of every joke, and but now he finds himself in Pittsburgh, a team that limped into the playoffs but made the playoffs with the likes of Kenny Pickett, Mitch Trubisky, and Mason Rudolph. So I do think it is an upgrade in Pittsburgh. And I think Russell Wilson is in a similar situation he used to be in Seattle, a team that wants to run the ball, a team that wants to play defense. Unfortunately for him, he just lost Deontay Johnson right before we got on tonight. He was just traded to the Carolina Panthers. So I'm assuming they're going to probably find some help maybe in free agency or the draft. But Russell Wilson's dynasty stock, it's very similar to what it was last year, I think, just because he's kind of in a similar situation with Denver and Pittsburgh. He's going to be the starter there. Denver is paying his contract. Depending how he plays, I mean, who knows how long of a leash he's going to have in Pittsburgh. So he's definitely a volatile asset, but definitely an asset that didn't lose too much value, considering he probably will be starting for you this year. But his long-term outlook is definitely dicey. So definitely not a guy you're looking to build around by any means.
Yeah, I'll put it a little more bluntly. I mean, his career is on the line this season as a starting quarterback in the NFL. And when I see guys like that from a dynasty standpoint that are in that position, it's a high risk, high reward type of scenario, particularly in dynasty, where if you make these decisions and they don't pan out for you, you just invested in a quote unquote asset that just depreciated to essentially nothing. So that's the position he's in. If you rewind a little bit and look at his 23 season, the stats aren't terrible. He started 15 games. He had just over 3,000 yards, 26 touchdowns, eight interceptions. Finished quarterback 16 on a points per game basis. So not horrible, especially in super flex formats. But if you actually watch the games, you could tell that he was not nearly the player that he once was. You could tell that he didn't fit Sean Payton's system, which is why he's out of there. And with his new landing spot with the Steelers, I'm not overly high on this landing spot perfectly, honestly. Like you said, they're gonna want to pound the ball with Najee Harris and Jaylen Warren. And their new offensive coordinator is who again, Ethan?
It's your boy Arthur Smith, right?
Yeah, and what have we said about Arthur Smith for the last 2 years about holding?
He loves to throw the
Yeah, exactly.
football.
Like he wants to pound the ball, pound the ball, pound the ball. So I just don't see a 2024 version of Russell Wilson and Arthur Smith coming together to create fantasy football magic all of a sudden here. Now, if you want to take a shot on him nice and cheap and you're kind of looking for just a depth quarterback for the year as a contender, I could see you taking a shot on Wilson where his value is at an all-time low. But outside of a depth piece, I'm not touching this guy with a 10-foot pole, particularly in this landing spot with Deontay Johnson out the window as well. But that's what we got on Russell Wilson. We got a couple more quarterbacks to touch on. We're going to start with Gardner Minshew, signs with the Las Vegas Raiders, 2 years, $25 million with $15 million guaranteed. Word has it that Hill is going to quote unquote compete with Aiden O'Connell for the starting job. I think bringing Minshew in here, he's at least going to have the inside track on that week one starting position, assuming no other unforeseen moves come down the pike for the Raiders to address the quarterback need further. Minshew started the majority of the games last season for Indy with the injury to Anthony Richardson. He was quarterback 22 on a points per game basis among quarterbacks who started at least 10 games last year. And I kind of see more of the same for Minshew in 2024. He's never going to be a guy that a team really builds around. He's going to be more of a stopgap type of player. And even if he is named the starter this year, he has some pieces to work with in Devontae Adams and Jacoby Myers, maybe Michael Mayer in that mix as well. But I'm just not overly high on this landing spot. I think they're going to want to run the ball with Zamir White and any other running back they bring in to Vegas, either whether it be a marginal free agent still on the board or in the draft. So Minshew's never going to be a guy that just goes out there and lights it up consistently for fantasy purposes. I think ideally he's more like your third option at quarterback, someone who gives you that's a starting caliber performance, or maybe someone you stream off your bench in a good matchup. So I wouldn't pay more than a late second round pick for him. If that precludes me from getting a deal done for Minshew, then I'll be looking elsewhere to address my need at quarterback. But those are my quick thoughts on Minshew. Ethan, are you with me on this, or are you going in a different direction?
I'm pretty much with you. He's definitely not a guy you're gonna build around or invest heavily in. But I do think if you do have Gardner Minshew on your dynasty team, I think you are a winner because I think there's a good chance that he is going to be the Las Vegas Raiders starter this year. So for a guy that was the backup to Anthony Richardson, obviously gets some playing time, quarterback, you said 22 in points per game, getting that opportunity because A. Rich goes down, you were like, okay, that was good. I got to use him this past year, but who knows what his future is? And now he goes to a spot where they need a quarterback, unless Aiden O'Connell can beat him out. But if he does beat out Aiden O'Connell and he's the starter for the Vegas Raiders, like you said, it gives you like that third option, or maybe you're a desperate QB needy team, and now you have a QB2 at least on your team. But I think the managers of Gardner Minshew, I think they're the winners in this early part of free agency, just for the simple fact that they might have just picked up a starting quarterback.
Yeah, 100%. Particularly the super flex formats. This is why you want to roster those guys that are, they might be backups, but you can kind of tell they're sort of next in line to start. And especially a guy with like Minshew, who started a little bit in Jacksonville. He had obviously broke his way getting that to the start when Anthony Richardson went down, but then he's made the most of it. So this is a guy that guys like this you want to target because all of a sudden they can go very quickly go from a guy who has no value to someone who is startable in your lineup if you need them, or maybe they're just a trade asset. You can flip them out for a second round pick and it's just found money that you didn't have before. And this last quarterback we're going to talk about is sort of falling into that same category in the form of Sam Darnold, where kind of another reclamation quarterback where he was an early first round pick. He flamed out with the Jets and the Panthers and kind of got a little bit of that Kyle Shanahan magic dust sprinkled all over him where spending a year out there in San Francisco, but where are you at on him here landing with the Vikings 1 year, $10 million?
I think it's a classic case of, hey, you get that top five draft capital in the NFL draft, you're going to continue to get opportunities in your NFL career. while as those second round quarterbacks, third round quarterbacks, I mean, they come in and they blow their shot. The odds of them getting another opportunity are very little, which is why, I mean, having a dynasty asset that is picked in the top five, top 10, there are chances that you will get opportunity. I mean, look at Baker Mayfield. I mean, he's had a couple chances and now he's cashed in. And Sam Darnold, obviously pick number three with the New York Jets, goes over to San Francisco this past year, and now he might have a legitimate chance to be the starter in Minnesota, throwing to Justin Jefferson. So who knows what the Vikings are going to do? I know we were talking about this before we got on tonight. I think it's more of a fail-safe almost for Minnesota if they can't trade up in the NFL draft. If there's no other moves to make via trade, I think they're going to be comfortable with Sam Darnold at the helm. They are paying him $10 million for 1 year, so I think there's a good chance you're gonna get a starting quarterback in Sam Darnold this year. So obviously his stock is way up from what it was a couple days ago. So hey, if Sam Darnold can get another shot and revitalize his career, good for him.
Yeah, that's more or less how I see it too. I mean, the only roadblock to him is obviously is what they do in the draft at this point. I think it's unlikely that Justin Fields ends up going there just because the two teams are in the same division. And whether you agree with it or not, teams in the same division don't like to trade players to one another. Just kind of how it works. So I think Darnold has inside track over guys already in the league to be that starter for the Vikings, but we'll see what they do. They've kind of been linked to guys like JJ McCarthy. Maybe McCarthy ends up going too high for them. They got to move up. Maybe they can do it. Maybe they can't. So a lot's got still kind of up in the air with Sam Darnold, but like you said, definitely a big improvement to where he was just a few days ago in terms of his dynasty value. And with that, we're going to shift gears here. We're going to go to the running back position. A number of moves here went down at this position. I do not remember a free agent year where the running back has rebounded so much in value. You know, we say all the time it's a committee league now, and this position kind of gets forgotten about a little bit. I mean, last offseason we had guys like Barkley, Jacobs, Tony Pollard really just, you know, struggling for months to get paid and get what they're worth, and had to fight tooth and nail on franchise tags, get teams to pay them. And fast forward 1 year, and these guys are all getting paid within the first 24 hours or so of the legal tampering period being underway. So we're going to start with Saquon Barkley here, signing with the Philadelphia Eagles, 3 years, 37.7 million dollars plus incentives on top of that as well. So Barkley gets to stick around in the NFC East, joining the rival Philadelphia Eagles. And honestly, just about anywhere outside of New York was going to be an upgrade for Barkley in my book. He goes from operating behind the Giants' 30th ranked offensive line to the Eagles' number one ranked offensive line. Those rankings are per Pro Football Focus. Obviously, the Eagles are going to have to replace first team All-Pro center Jason Kelce. That's an uphill battle for sure, but you know, they're retaining most of their unit that made them so good over the last few years. And the Eagles offense as a whole is easily the best one Saquon has ever been a part of. At no point in his career has he ever played for a team that finished in the top 15 in the league in points per game. So he's going to get that opportunity in all likelihood this season to do just that. And the TD equity with him, it's probably going to be there, but obviously Jalen Hurts does remain a threat to poach touchdowns at the goal line. We'll see if teams can kind of get hip to that tush push and take it away somewhat. Maybe Kelsey's retirement has something to do with that. Maybe it's not quite as effective as it was. Also, the Eagles just have a better option now at running back than they did in the past. So I like him here. I like Saquon a lot for this season. Obviously, at age 27, he's not going to be like a top, you know, two or three running back asset any longer, but he does still crack my top 10 at the position. You know, I do think he should only be rostered by teams that are contending and are legit in it to win it this season. If you're rebuilding, you should get this guy off your roster. It's definitely before the season starts. So those are my quick thoughts on Barkley. Where are you at on him?
Yeah, I think this is a very good landing spot for Saquon Barkley. I was listening to some other podcasts, and I did hear someone say like that Barkley was, I think, contacted behind the line of scrimmage more than any running back in the league, and DeAndre Swift was contacted behind the line of scrimmage like the least of any running back in the league. And it's right around there. I don't know the exact numbers, but AKA the Philadelphia Eagles offensive line is much better than the New York Giants. I think Saquon Barkley is going to thrive in that offense. I think really the only deterrent in that offense is the fact that Jalen Hurts doesn't check the ball down very often at all to the running back. So I don't know how that's gonna obviously impact Barkley in the receiving game. But then again, I mean, when you have Saquon Barkley, you're probably going to script touches for him. But and the biggest thing is obviously Jalen Hurts. What do you have, like 15 rushing touchdowns last year, whatever it was. So obviously that's not ideal for the starting tailback. But Saquon Barkley, I think his stock, I think it increased, and I would love to have Barkley on my team if I'm a contender this year and next year. I think Barkley's going to have a very solid couple years in Philadelphia, kind of the last probably peak years of Saquon's fantasy career, that is. But Saquon Barkley going to Philly was a was I think it was great for his stock. But just to touch on the running back free agency class in general, as you said, I don't remember it being like this. This has been kind of insane this year in free agency for the running backs. There were just so many running backs that were on the market, and it made the first day of the legal tampering period a lot of fun. And it is funny, like all these guys are getting paid like crazy. I wonder if that's a precursor to what the NFL thinks of the running backs in the 2024 draft class. I know a lot of people in the space have been saying this is a bad draft running back class, a bad running back class. And then the combine comes, like, oh, wait a second, maybe it's not so bad. But then obviously first day one of legal tampering, these running backs are getting paid like crazy and they're flying off the board. So I don't know, maybe it's a precursor to a lackluster draft class for the running backs.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's one I brought up in my blog series throughout the offseason, really, that if you're and it, here's how it affects dynasty managers, really. And if this is a precursor to what NFL teams think or don't think of the upcoming running back class in 2024, you as a dynasty manager, if you've been a rebuilding team and you're coming out of it now, or if you're a middle of the road team that needs a running back, like you're probably gonna have to pivot to some of these veteran players that. And that's not a traditional way you want to build your dynasty roster. I mean, usually you want to go young at running back. You want to draft these guys and plug them into your lineup so you have them on, when they're 22, maybe 23 years old, and you can ride them for 4 or 5 years. Whereas now, like if you're pivoting into a win now build, you're probably gonna have to rely on the veteran running backs more than you would have wanted to. So it's an interesting time of to be in a dynasty league where you're having to value running backs a little bit differently than you maybe would have earlier. Yeah, I guess any quick thoughts on that before we keep the train going on these running backs?
Yeah, I agree completely. I don't think you're going to be able to rely on the 2024 rookie running back class. I do think there is potential, but I don't think there's any one back you can really be like, hey, that they're going to come in the NFL and be a starter for any team or be viable for any fantasy team, right? So I do think this is the year where you really need to lean heavily on those veterans, and the money was flying from NFL teams' pockets right into these running backs' pockets, and it was fun to see. I think it was great for running back value, and I think it was great for fantasy. So that's all I really have to say about that.
Great. And let's keep moving here to Derrick Henry, high profile running back in his own right. Baltimore Ravens, 2 years, $16 million, plus some incentives tossed in there as well. And the Ravens were linked to a Derrick Henry trade around the deadline last fall. Ultimately, the Titans decided to keep him for the stretch run in a lost season, knowing that he wasn't going to be re-signed. Brilliant move on their part to get nothing for their franchise player. But ultimately he ends up joining the Ravens in free agency. This team was number one in the league in rushing attempts last season. Obviously, some of that's the quarterback with Lamar and some design runs and improvising and all that, but they're definitely content to run the football. And Henry showed last season that he could still take on a big workload running the football. He was number one in the league in carries and number two in rushing yards. And he also showed that he still has that burst to him in the open field. He was number two in breakaway run rate. And fantasy-wise, he was still productive despite playing in the 27th ranked offense in points per game. So he is getting long in the tooth. He's entering his age 30 season, which is obviously is a big red flag for the running back position. But he's definitely a win now piece for dynasty purposes. And who knows? Maybe with the threat of Lamar running on the ground mixed in with Henry, that it just creates that extra second of hesitation in the defense's minds. And maybe we're seeing him pop some big chunk plays and scoring a bunch of touchdowns at 2024, despite being 30 years old. But definitely a win now piece. I know you're going to agree on that part of it. But overall, what are your thoughts on Henry this year?
I thought this was one of the more predictable landing spots, and I think Henry is going to have a chance to have a very, very good season. As you said, even though he's getting older, I still think he has some gas left in the tank. You mentioned the breakaway run rate. He was number two in breakaway runs, so he can still hit the edge. He can still obviously take one deep. He was number 10 in yards created, and he obviously number one in carries, because that's what Derrick Henry does. So, I mean, unless the wheels fall off in this off season, and all those carries just add up, I which I don't think is going to happen. I think he's going to have a very good year in Baltimore, and I don't think he's going to have to touch the ball as much as he did in Tennessee. Obviously, with Lamar Jackson taking a lot of those carries, and I think, as you said, I think Lamar Jackson with that run threat is going to definitely help Derrick Henry get some cleaner rushing lanes. But just to touch on your point too about Tennessee, it just doesn't make any sense. If you're not going to re-sign Derrick Henry, why wouldn't you just move him for anything last year? Like, your team was going nowhere. You were looking to probably tank anyways. You weren't going to win any games. And instead, you just, you know what, we're going to keep Derrick Henry on a roster just to let him walk away in free agency. So I don't really understand what's going through some of these front offices in the NFL.
Yeah, that was a head scratcher move for sure on their part. I remember kind of thinking that at the time too, that it's a lost season, you should be recouping some value, but ultimately they didn't end up doing it. But I guess it just makes the price cheaper to get him for Baltimore a year later. But let's move on to another player that switched teams at the running back position. We had Josh Jacobs go from the Raiders to the Packers on a 4-year deal worth up to $48 million. Green Bay also moved on from Aaron Jones, kind of clearing the way for Jacobs to be the RB1 there for the next couple of seasons here. Give me your rundown on Jacobs.
I love this spot for Jacobs. I think he's going to a better, more efficient offense. I love what the Packers are doing. I think the Packers were more of a surprise to a lot of people last year, considering how young they were. I mean, Jordan Love in his first year starting, and you have the youngest receiving core in the league. I mean, rookie tight end Luke Musgrave. You have a few rookie receivers in Jayden Reed and Wicks, and obviously you have Christian Watson. I mean, just first and second year players, and to watch them put up a battle against the 49ers in the division round of the playoffs was pretty impressive. And now you're inserting Josh Jacobs, who's one of the better running backs in the NFL. I think it's an upgrade to Aaron Jones and AJ Dillon. Obviously, massive news that Aaron Jones got released. So now it's basically the Josh Jacobs show. Josh Jacobs has been taking the workhorse role in Las Vegas for the last couple of years now. I'm not exactly sure if the Packers are going to add another piece, but when you're paying a running back 4 years, $48 million, you're probably going to use him very heavily in a pretty efficient Matt LaFleur led offense. So I'm very excited for my Josh Jacobs shares.
Yeah, it's a good landing spot for Jacobs. I mean, the only thing you really need to worry about here is if he's still the same player after taking that massive workload in 2022. The advanced analytics on him kind of dropped a little bit off last season. Obviously, he was hurt for the first time in his career last season as well, which played a role. But obviously, that didn't stop the Packers from handing him a big bag of money. So they're definitely going to give him every opportunity he can to succeed. He's 26 years old, does have just over 1,500 career touches on his frame. So, he has been used in his career, but like you said, Green Bay up and coming offense. They've done a lot of things right, drafting the right pieces there, and they're kind of splurging here on a free agent to kind of shore up their ground game. So, I am very much invested in that the future of that offense. I think they're going to be good, just get better as the years go on. So, I think it's as good a landing spot as you could have hoped for Josh Jacobs if you're holding on to some shares of him. And let's just go to his former or his the guy whose job he's taking. And Aaron Jones, he sticks around in the NFC North and signs with the Minnesota Vikings 1 year, $7 million. He'll be 30 towards the end of the season. 2023 was an interesting year for Aaron Jones. Injured his hamstring in week one, then missed a total of 6 games on the campaign. Didn't finish strong. If you count there are two playoff games. He averaged over 5 yards per carry in his last 5 games. And A lot of that could be just him kind of having those fresh legs from not really playing much in the season. Whereas at the end of the year, other teams are kind of banged up. So it does help to have the a little bit less mileage on your tires in the season, which is kind of was the case for Jones there. I feel better about Minnesota if Cousins was sticking around there, kind of just keeping that offense humming. But I think they should be a little bit more run heavy than they were in 2024. I mean, the last couple of years they've been throwing the ball like crazy, so they're due for some aggression in that front, especially if Sam Darnold's going to be the quarterback. So I think Jones could get some value in there. Jones can also catch passes too. We've seen that throughout his career. So he should be, at least at the moment, penciled in to be the pseudo bell cow on that team. They'll probably add another back, maybe a free agency or the draft, but I think it's going to be his job out of the chute here. Jones, obviously, at 30 is a rental for dynasty purposes. He's a guy you want if you're contending, and a guy that you want to get rid of if you are no longer contending for the 2024 season. So that's my somewhat quick version of Aaron Jones in Minnesota, Ethan. Yeah, you with me on that?
I have not much more to add. I think a 30-year-old Aaron Jones, the fact that he's going to a spot where there's really no running back there, I think is obviously good for his value. I don't think his value really changed much. I think it stayed more so the same, except for the fact that he is going into a worse offense now that Cousins isn't there, but you're still getting a starter running back. So he's going to maintain his starter level role, which is going to be good for any contender for the year. But if you have Aaron Jones in your team and you're a rebuilder, you're probably not going to get much for him considering he is 30 years old. So maybe hold on to him, hoping he has a hot start in Minnesota, and maybe you can trade him to a contender or maybe a contender at the deadline. But for his stock, like he's a 30-year-old running back. There's not much juice left in his value, but it is nice that he went to a spot where he will probably be, like you said, the pseudo bell cow for at least a year.
For sure. If you can trade him now for a 2024 second round pick in a super flex league, I would do it. And if you can't get it done, like you said, you hang on maybe closer to the season, if not into the first couple of weeks of the season. You see if you can grab a 25 second for him if you're a rebuilding team. But if you're competing, then you're going to want to hang on to him and just ride those last year or two he has left in his career out. Let's stick though in the NFC North. We're talking about a guy who ends up, he's a newcomer to the division now in DeAndre Swift. Coming, he's now a Chicago Bear, signs for 3 years, $24 million, joins his third different team in 3 years. Ethan, why don't you just get us going on this guy here? What do you think about DeAndre Swift landing in Chicago?
I mean, I've always been a DeAndre Swift fan, and he's getting paid like a guy that's going to be the primary ball carrier in Chicago. And I'm pretty excited because if Chicago, who knows what they're going to do with their quarterback situation. I think they're going to draft Caleb Williams. Obviously, they're kind of still playing around with Justin Fields, and who knows where he's going to end up. But I think the writing's on the wall that Caleb Williams is going to be a Chicago Bear, obviously unless Caleb Williams downright refuses to go, pulls an Eli Manning, but with a rookie quarterback at the helm, a guy of who's supposed to be a franchise level quarterback, in Caleb Williams, obviously all the hype. I know his value has been kind of a little volatile as of late, just because of his attitude off the field. But I think DeAndre Swift in that offense, with DJ Moore, a potential another receiver, maybe a Malik Nabers at pick 8 or 9, whatever they have, that offense might be something. And I think having a guy like DeAndre Swift, a guy that can run the ball and be a good pass catcher, I think it's good for his value. I don't think his value changed a considerable amount. If anything, I think, and like I said, I don't know completely about his details, but for a guy that got 3 years, $24 million, I think that kind of locks him up as the starter for at least a couple years, depending on the contract structure. But to me, that's more stability than he had in Philly, and I think he has a chance to do very similar things fantasy wise as he did in Philadelphia, and probably more, considering I think he's going to get more workload. You're not going to have a quarterback that vultures 15 rushing touchdowns. So I think it's kind of wheels up for DeAndre Swift.
Yeah, I'm not gonna go that far on Swift. He's kind of those guys who always leaves you wanting a little bit more when you have him. You know, he was an early second round pick in the NFL draft. He was a top five pick in one quarterback dynasty leagues, and I'd argue he hasn't lived up to that yet. He finished between RB18 and RB23 in half PPR scoring every year since being drafted. So he is viable. He's not a bust by any means, but he just hasn't lived up to the cost to acquire him. He's been a guy who's been expensive for most of his dynasty career. And he was okay in Philadelphia last year. Obviously, he'll never have a better situation than he had a season ago, running behind the best offensive line in the league, and also really having the lion's share of that backfield to himself. And guys like Kenneth Gainwell and Rashad Penny were more or less invisible last season. So he is joining a committee now alongside Roschon Johnson and Khalil Herbert, who's still in town. We saw Matt Eberflus use a committee last season. Like, it was a really frustrating backfield to try to pin down who was going to get the carries that week. I do think the contract does make him the leader of that committee for sure. I'm just not overly convinced that this is the spot where he's going to take another big jump forward. And ultimately, I think he's going to be a guy we look back on and say, yeah, he was all right, but he kind of really didn't live up to the price there. Is there anything you want to say else on Swift? I know this is your guy, and I'm kind of dumping on him a little bit. So I guess I'll let you have the last word on him before we move on.
No, I understand all your points, which is kind of why I said I don't think his value really changed like too much, because he is going from one of the better running offenses in the league to the Chicago Bears. So there's obviously going to be probably some downtick in efficiency, but as you said, I mean, he did have a snap share of 58.2% in Philadelphia, which was good for number 17 in the league. So it's that 60%er, that's pretty much the NFL's quote unquote workhorse threshold these days. So does he get 60% snap share in Chicago? Who knows? I just think looking at the money coming into him, I think he's going to be utilized. So I'm hoping he can take advantage and be the guy that we were hoping for coming out of Georgia. But as you said, he really hasn't lived up to the hype of that 2020 RB class.
Yeah, that whole class really hasn't, outside of Jonathan Taylor, really. So that would we were kind of sold the bill of goods on that class. But let's talk about a guy who had really no billing at all coming into the league and then really carved out a role for himself. That's Austin Ekeler, a former undrafted free agent. Times with the Washington Commanders, 2 years, $11.4 million for Ekeler. Definitely not a sexy landing spot for a guy who's been a catalyst of many fantasy championships for multiple teams here in recent seasons. He's getting old on his own right. Turns 29 before the year, so the end is definitely coming sooner rather than later for Ekeler. Washington, they're going to be breaking in a rookie quarterback here, and Ekeler, you know, he's an excellent pass catcher, which I think should help him complement Brian Robinson, who's more of a two down thumper on the ground. The Commanders here, they're likely going to be trailing in a lot of games, which I think could lead to some garbage time points for Ekeler in the second half as a check down option. Maybe he gets in the end zone some as well. His dynasty value here is obviously at an all-time low. If you have him, you're probably just better off riding him into the sunset, unless you're in a full-blown rebuild. Then he kind of falls into that category where we're talking about with guys like Derrick Henry, and a few others that you just want to wait till the year starts, then just get him off your team as quickly as possible. So that's all I got for Ekeler here. Keeping it short and sweet on him.
I tend to agree with you about Austin Ekeler. I don't think he's gonna get the opportunity share that he did in LA. I mean, he had a 66.9% snap share, which was number 10, a 70% opportunity share, which was number 11. I mean, his receiving, he had number 74 targets, which was number 5 amongst backs. He was a workhorse for LA, and his efficiency was definitely on the downtick last year. His true yards per carry, which discounts runs over 10 yards, was only 3.3, which is number 62 in the league. His yards per touch was number 31 at 4.6. His juke rate was only 16.5%, which is number 36. And for a guy that was we're used to seeing those huge chunk plays, I mean, his breakaway run rate was only 2.2%, number 46, and he only had four breakaway runs, which was number 40. So definitely a guy that looked like he lost some juice. I don't know if you remember that clip that was circling the internet when Ekeler kind of took it left off tackle and was sprinting up the sidelines, and he looked like he was in slow motion. I think he was injured Well, I think the injuries piled up last year, and he just didn't have the juice because of that. But I do think he's going to have an opportunity in Washington to be heavily utilized in the receiving game. They're probably going to have a rookie quarterback there, and maybe Austin Eckler's rookie quarterback's best friend, and he'll get a lot of checkdowns. But I do think Austin Eckler, as you said, is definitely on a downward spiral in terms of his fantasy value, and you're probably better off just holding on to him and riding him out in the sunset, like you said. And if you're a rebuilder, I mean, if you can get any 24 second, that's probably not a bad move to make, considering this is a pretty deep class.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's never going to be a guy who rebounds in value from this. I mean, even if he has a good year this year, he's looking at his age 30 season coming up on us quickly. So, yeah, he's a guy who at this stage of his career probably needs to do less to give you more, meaning he needs to take less of a workload to hope and hopefully be more efficient because of it. And obviously needs to provide that receiving work when Washington falls behind in games. But let's talk about another guy who's been better off doing a little bit less. And that has yielded him a better result in the past. That, of course, is Tony Pollard leaving the Dallas Cowboys, signing with the Tennessee Titans, 3 years, $24 million here. So, what do you think about Pollard landing in Tennessee after a disappointing year in 2023?
It's definitely not the sexiest landing spot. I mean, you're going from the high-flying Dallas Cowboys offense to basically anemic Tennessee Titans. Pollard just wasn't – he just didn't look like the same guy last year. He was an absolute bell cow on a good offense. He had a 70.9% snap share, which is number seven in the league, and it didn't result in fantasy production that we were expecting. If you had Tony Pollard in Dynasty, if you drafted him in redraft, he definitely didn't live up to the draft capital. And I think obviously Tajay Spears is there, so I think it's gonna be a committee with Pollard and Spears. Pollard, based on the money, I think is gonna get the majority opportunity share, but in a low scoring, probably not very efficient offense. I mean, what's that going to net? I mean, you had Pollard, who ended up being an RB2 with a 71% snap share on a very good Dallas Cowboys offense, and he's couldn't even be, he couldn't get into the RB1, he couldn't get RB1 numbers this year. So, what are we really going to expect in Tennessee? I think getting 3 years, $24 million, it definitely insulates whatever value he has for the next few seasons, but the time to sell Tony Pollard was coming into this year. I don't think we saw the same player. I think a big part of that was maybe that ankle injury that we kind of looked over, probably a little too much. The ankle he broke in the playoffs, or right before the playoffs, I forget exactly what it was, but it was.
Yeah, I think it was a tibia or a fibula. It was a broken leg.
Yeah, broken leg towards the end of the season, and he just didn't look like he had the same juice. So definitely, as a Tony Pollard manager myself, a guy that was getting offers for him, and I was in win now, and I kept him on my team, and it would have been nice to cash out for the bag, probably a year and a half ago. But hey, could have, would have, should have.
Yeah, I think the time to sell is heading into the 2023 season, where he was a first round redraft pick, or where he was, obviously the height, looking with Zeke moving on, like he was going to be the man. Didn't work out. I mean, it's easy to say in hindsight when you should have sold him or should have not sold him, but landing in here in what I think is going to be a low scoring committee is not ideal at all. I don't really have too much more to add. All that, I mean, he is going to be a guy who sticks around the league a few more years. He has under 1,000 touches on his frame, which is good. So he should last a few more years. If I had to put him a value on him in Dynasty, I'd probably say he's like a back end RB2, maybe even like high end RB3. We'll see how the draft pans out on that, but not someone I want really on my roster is anything more than a depth piece, and probably can't get much for him either. So you're probably stuck riding him out. A lot of guys in this discussion tonight are going to end up in that category just because running backs that are done with their rookie contracts are, five, four, five, six, 7 years into the league. And by then in Dynasty, that's when the value cliff kind of runs out for those guys. So we're gonna go touch on yet another aging player here. That's Joe Mixon. This is not a free agent signing, it's actually a trade. was kind of announced on Monday night that Mixon was going to be released by the Bengals, but Houston sort of swooped in at the last minute and flipped a seventh round pick over to Cincinnati for the veteran running back to get the deal done. This was kind of a savvy, nice little move in my estimation here for the Texans. Mixon, he's a productive veteran, and he's landing with a team who can afford to pay him his salary while they have CJ Stroud on a rookie contract. So I actually looked at Houston coming into this process as a premier destination for a free agent running back. So I do like the spot a lot for Mixon. At 28, like I said, he's not young anymore, and he's got over 1,800 career touches on his frame. So the odometer on him is really starting to rack up, but he does profile as a nice one-year rental for the Texans. And I think dynasty managers who are holding Mixon were kind of hoping he would stick around in Cincinnati, but for him moving on, this is about as good as a landing spot as you could have envisioned if you have him. So if you're trying to get rid of him, this is a nice sell high window to do so, to recoup any type of value for him. And if you're trying to acquire a guy to give you a push for this year, he might be a guy that you want to kick the tires on, at least to see what the price point is on a Joe Mixon. So those are my quick thoughts on him, Ethan. Where are you at on Mixon and heading into his what is it, eighth year in the league now?
I agree completely. This is probably the last time you have any chance to sell your Joe Mixon shares. Like you said, you probably couldn't have picked a better landing spot for Joe Mixon, leaving a great landing spot, obviously, in Cincinnati. So obviously great for Joe Mixon. And I think he's going to probably have a relatively decent year. I mean, Singletary had a had an okay year last year in that good offense. I'm assuming CJ Stroud in the offense is going to take another step. Joe Mixon, I still think he has a little bit of juice left. He's had a pretty good NFL career, and this might be his probably last ride in terms of fantasy value. But I mean, he did end up what? He was RB6 last year.
Yeah, he had a pretty solid finish for a team that was in disarray.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, if he can get the volume, if he can get somewhat similar volume in Houston, I mean, I don't see why he can't be minimum. His floor is probably an RB2, considering the Houston Texans offense is pretty legit. So, I mean, Joe Mixon for a contender, if you can get him cheap, I mean, it's not a bad depth piece. Maybe not a bad piece to add late in the process when you're trying to go for that championship. But yeah, Joe Mixon, good landing spot. And not much, really not much more to add on top of that.
Yeah, so let's stick in Cincinnati. Let's talk about this backfield a little bit more. Obviously, Mixon's out, so they needed a replacement. So they went and grabbed Zach Moss on a 2-year, $8 million extension. So we saw Moss have a nice run last season with the Colts when Jonathan Taylor was holding out, and then they were kind of bringing him along slowly after he did work out a long-term extension with the team. So I guess where do you project Zach Moss from here now that we know he's going to be a Bengal for the next 2 seasons?
Honestly, I thought this was one of the sneakier signings for fantasy because for people who have Zach Moss on their dynasty team, I mean, what a great pleasant surprise you received last year. I mean, there was a point where he was like, I mean, we were pretty deep in the fantasy season. He was I think he was a top 12 back. I mean, he was having a hell of a year. For the Colts. And even when Jonathan Taylor came back those first couple of weeks, he was ripping off a long touchdown run after long touchdown run. So Zach Moss definitely showed us something in Indianapolis, and he had a great year for Zach Moss standards. And like I said, he was a very pleasant surprise. And I think he lands in a spot where he's going to be competing with the likes of Chase Brown. And I think Travion Williams or Williamson is there. I think still. So he's right now, I think he's a leader in the clubhouse to be the starter. So, I mean, barring any other free agent signings and or barring anything done like early on in the NFL draft, like rounds two or three, I think Zach Moss is going to be your week one starter.
Yeah, it's a good offense. I mean, Joe Burrow coming back is going to help that unit take a lift. And I like the spot a lot for Zach Moss. I don't have much more to pile on there, so I won't. But we'll move on to Devin Singletary. He signs with the Giants, 3 years, $16.5 million. dollar contract. And this move here, it reunites him with Brian Daboll, who was his offensive coordinator in Buffalo for 3 years. And kind of similar to to Moss here, who was his former teammate actually. At the moment, he profiles to be a starting running back here. The difference, of course, here is that the Giants offense is in disarray, whereas the Bengals offense is getting Joe Burrow back. So also toss into that mix that he's not nearly as talented as Saquon Barkley, who's departing in free agency. So Singletary, he's not terrible though by any means. Like, he does bring some consistency to the table. He's produced between 969 yards and 1,099 yards from scrimmage in each of his 5 seasons in the league. So he is dependable, but not great by any means. The team's probably going to look to add some backfield depth in the draft, and but for now, I think it looks like he's going to be the leader in this backfield here, kind of no matter what else they do from this point forward. At 27, yet again, another running back you're not going to be using as much more than a depth piece as a contender. So that's my rundown on Singletary, Ethan. Are you in on him this year? Are you out on him, or was what I said just about right?
That's what it's about, right? I mean, Devin Singletary was a W, sorry, an RB3 last year. He was RB29, and which I think was actually a pleasant surprise, considering I don't think people expected him to completely take over for Dameon Pierce, but he did, and he had a pretty good season. But that was obviously a pretty efficient offense, a good offense, and he was a RB3. And now, like you said, he's going to an offense that isn't very efficient, isn't very good, doesn't have a very good offensive line. So, I mean, his ceiling probably is an RB3. But hey, right now he's projected to be the starter. And if you have Devin Singletary shares, I mean, that's really all you can ask for.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, he's a starting running back on a team. It would have been better if he stuck around in Houston, probably, but what can you do? I mean, a 3-year contract for a team where he can at least handle the workload in theory is about as good as you can ask for. And let's go to a team that we've been asking for a lot better here as Patriots fans. We have not been getting it thus far early in the free agency period. But we're going to talk about Antonio Gibson, one of the few newcomers they did sign so far. Lands at the Patriots, a 3-year deal, $11.2 million, only 5.3 of which is guaranteed, plus some incentives on top as well if he hits certain metrics. So we're both Patriots fans here, Ethan. We know the team pretty well here, but I guess I'll give you the floor here just get it rolling on Antonio Gibson.
I love this signing from a real football perspective. I mean, like you said, 3 years, $11.25 million, pretty cheap for a guy as like athletic and talented as Antonio Gibson. I don't think he was fully unleashed in Washington, and I'm hoping the Patriots can use him more as a receiver, which we were all begging for in Washington. But Antonio Gibson, I've always been a big fan, and as a Patriots fan, I was pumped for this signing. I would have been more pumped if the Patriots were actually relevant and actually had a good team. But anyways, the Antonio Gibson signing, I really like. I don't really know how viable it is going to be fantasy wise, but if it is Ramondre Stevenson and Antonio Gibson, I do think he is gonna have a chance to carve out that third down role, to a 2 minute role, and I do think he can be viable in full point PPR. We'll see. I mean, we really don't know what the Patriots are going to do at the quarterback position, but more so from real football point, I really like the signing. Fantasy, I don't think. I mean, Antonio Gibson's value is kind of in the tank. I mean, a guy that was, again, that part of that vault, that vaunted 2020 class, that RB class. He really hasn't lived up to his hype, but we'll see what he can do in New England, a team that's basically bringing back all their skill position players, which makes not a lot of sense considering they were like one of the worst offenses in the league last year. But I mean, I guess the Patriots will do what the Patriots will do.
Last year, I mean, they were one of the worst offenses in the last decade. In fact, they were the worst offense in the last decade from a points per game standpoint. So I could go on a rant about how the Patriots are a mess and how they need wholesale changes, and so far they're not doing it. But this is the one of the new guys I did bring in, so we'll stick to him on this one. I do also like it from a real football standpoint. I think there is some untapped potential with Antonio Gibson. I'm not sure how fantasy relevant it's going to be. We wanted more out of Gibson. We were begging Ron Rivera for years to utilize him more as a pass catcher. Obviously, he was a wide receiver in college, And obviously, he just didn't do it. Instead, he was given that role to the likes of J.D. McKissick for a couple years, which obviously drove us crazy as dynasty managers. So, in fairness too, Gibson has struggled with consistency. He's had some untimely drops and obviously fumbles at different points in his career that have led to him getting into the doghouse. So, I don't see much standalone value for Gibson. Maybe in the PPR formats, like you said, in the right matchup, you can kind of predict that. He might carve out a little bit of a role for himself on third down, but if you have Ramondre Stevenson, I think this is about as good as it gets. You knew the Pats were going to bring another back, whether it be the draft or free agency. So I don't think he takes much from Ramondre on first or second down. And I think Ramondre still gets involved in the passing game too, but maybe if he's going to lose any value, it would be on those third down, those checkdowns to Gibson. So we'll see here what Gibson can give us here over the next couple of years in New England, and hopefully the team as a whole can step it up. And we'll go from one team that's rebuilding to another team that's kind of more so retooling with a new coaching staff out in LA with the Chargers. They signed Gus Edwards to a 2-year, $6.5 million contract. This move, it reunites Gus Bus with his former offensive coordinator and Greg Roman out in LA. And a lot of times you see this, you see that guys, it's not always how good you are, it's who you know. So Gus Bus is definitely not a guy who's a household name, but he just has that relationship with Greg Roman, and the belief is around the Chargers that with Jim Harbaugh coming up from Michigan, that he wants to kind of bring a run heavy attack to town. And Gus Edwards might not be a guy who is ever going to take on 300 touches, but I think he can be a solid cog in a highly functioning running offense if that's what they choose to do out there with the Chargers. So it's a good price point, obviously. Two years, 6.5 million, definitely not breaking the bank, and I think it could be someone who has some sneaky value. But I do want to see what this team does in the draft to address that need as well, to fill out their depth chart in the running back room.
Yeah, no, I thought it was a pretty sneaky signing. The only other running back there, I believe, right now is Isaiah Spiller. So Gus Edwards, obviously familiar with Greg Roman. We know Harbaugh wants to run the ball, beefing up the trenches, getting a guy like Gus Edwards, who I believe had 13 touchdowns last year. So a guy that can definitely be inserted into a good offense that may give you a week-to-week upside. Considering he is playing with Justin Herbert, playing in most likely a high-scoring offense, and he's a guy that has a very good chance to fall in the end zone week to week. So I definitely think for Gus Edwards, even though he's not getting a ton of money, so there's really no guarantee that he's not guaranteed any kind of what any role whatsoever. But I do think, considering that the free agent running back market obviously is dried up pretty quickly, they chose Gus Edwards. This 2024 running back class isn't a guarantee by any means. So, I mean, you very well could see Gus Edwards getting the majority of the goal line and early down work in LA this year. So, obviously, that's good news for Gus Edwards managers.
Yeah, he's a guy that I'm willing to throw a third round pick out there on right now to see if I can get him on the cheap and take a shot. I mean, third round picks have low hit rates anyway, and if I'm a contender, I kind of want that depth running back out there to see if I can get a couple years of viability out of him. So, I'd be willing to make that risk if you can get someone to give him to you for maybe a mid or late third round pick. But we'll see on that front here. But that's what we have for an episode for this week, folks. Obviously, this is a really crazy time of year with a lot of moves going on. So make sure you're following us closely on all of our social media platforms. We're on X at Sunday_Surefire. We're on Instagram at Sunday Surefire, and you can find us on Facebook as well. Sunday Surefire right on there. And until next time, folks, peace.